Good afternoon, 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on WAMC's afternoon call-in program for this Thursday, July 26th. I'm Brian Shields. Joining us today to discuss gardening are horticulturalist Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery and arborist Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. Looking to spruce up your yard or garden? Want to know how to keep your flowers, shrubs, and trees healthy? The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email your questions to voxpop@wamc.org. Planting, pruning, watering, just about anything goes today. Your calls are all coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in program. I'm Brian Shields. Today, we talk about gardening. Bob Graves is a horticulturalist and co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. He has also been an avid hands-in-the-dirt gardener for 40 years. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. It's all about plants and gardening today on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551, the number to call. It's 800-348-2551. Tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number to call, 800-348-2551. Bob and Fred, thanks for coming back in.
It's good to be here.
Yeah.
It's been a pretty hot summer and pretty dry until about the last week or so. Then the rains came. Has that been sort of difficult as the, you got dry soil and then suddenly you're drenched?
It's been so spotty this last week or two, though. Some places have had 3 inches of rain and some places have had a quarter of an inch. So you really have to pay attention to where you are. At the nursery, we're very near the Albany Airport, and we had basically nothing yesterday.
Yeah.
A couple of showers, and other people got drenched.
So. Yeah, we got some storms, like you said, but we did get some decent rain. And it is difficult because, well, first off, a lot of times the dry time of year is often now, but not quite as dry as
this is unusual.
Yeah, and then it's been that excessive heat with that, and the plants need that moisture to be able to get into the roots and out of the leaves. That actually acts kind of like a radiator and actually keeps the plant cooler. But if there's not a lot of water that's going in, there's not a lot of water that's going to be going out. The plant actually can overheat, and then you get these big bursts of rain, and the ground is so hard and so compacted and dry that it takes a lot, and if it's a heavy rain,
it's gone.
A good chunk of that's never going to get in.
Just runs off.
It runs off. It only creates what we call a shallow watering. Now, plants that have some surface mulching, which is why we always say mulching, is a good thing. Too much mulch or mulching incorrectly is bad, but mulch in general is good because, A, it helps to conserve that moisture. It also helps to get that rain slowly. It slows it down, and it gives it a little more time to get down into the root profile where the plants need it.
800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Let's talk to Kathy in Seward.
Hi. I have in front of my house a very old, very large butternut tree.
Okay.
And some of the limbs appear dead. They're no longer making any leaves. And, I mean, I don't know whether it's just, whether it would be, helpful to have it, thoroughly pruned, if that would prolong its life at all.
Well, first off, the fact that you have a large butternut is a great thing. That tree, unfortunately, has some issues. In the wild, there's a fungus that's been sort of putting a hurting on those particular trees.
For 50 years or more.
Yeah, quite a while. And it's wearing a lot of the big ones out. To see big ones, and they are around, but to see them, it's like a big elm. You don't see them that commonly anymore. And this fungus is a nasty one, and once it usually gets a bad case of it, it's hard to reverse it. So the key is always to try to keep the plant healthy. Now, on an older tree, and I assume that you see some dead branches throughout the crown, that's not so much a big surprise to see dead branches on an older tree. It's like wrinkles on an older person, kind of part of life. But if it is getting a serious decline where you're losing over half the foliage on that plant, then that doesn't sound good. So you still have a full kind of healthy crown with some dead branches sporadically mixed through? Is that what I'm...
Yes.
Yeah. So then in that case, that's good news. The dead wood should be removed. You should get probably an arborist to get in there and do the actual removal of the dead wood, because
it
on a big old
becomes a hazard, doesn't it, Fred?
It can, and also the tree wants to close over those injuries. It wants to seal them. Trees don't heal; they seal. And if the dead wood is sort of left in those spots where the tree wants to close it, the actual dead branch acts like a cork and it can't actually close it. So by getting some of those dead branches out of there, not only does it look better, the tree could actually be a bit more healthy, because now some of those injuries could close and perhaps even help to...
Doesn't have to use energy to try to close it up.
You got it. It's going to use less energy. Otherwise, the energy is going to go there anyways, but it won't close it.
And so with a tree like that, you want an arborist to take a look at it to see if there are some hazards that you don't see, if there's any problems.
Yeah, I would like to know that. Like you say, if it's got this fungus or whatever.
Yeah, it may be damaged on the inside that you're not seeing.
And I should get somebody to look at it now
so they
can see which limbs have the leaves and which don't.
You got it, because right now in the beginning of middle of summer, the tree has had enough time to either support limbs or not. So anything that you see now is what I would call, for the most part, relatively stable growth, which means that, you know, you could have someone come in like an arborist and assess it, and they would be able to tell vitality, vigor, and of course what you said, which ones are dead and which ones should be removed and which ones alive. Very easy now. You can go to our wonderful website. In fact, we were just talking about this before the show started. It's a free resource put out by the International Society of Arboriculture, and it's the site is called treesaregood.com.
treesaregood.com.
treesaregood.com. And
I can find a local arborist?
You can. There's a searchable database on there, and you type in your zip code and it'll pull up a list of arborists that are closest to you. And, you know, there's usually a handful of them that'll, you know, certainly be able to take a look at that tree at a given time. So if that doesn't work, you could always try to, you know, ask me at the Arboretum and I could try to find someone for you. But that's a great site.
Fred, thank you.
You got it.
Thank you very much for calling. 800-348-2551. Bob Graves of Fatigan's is here, and also Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum. Your calls about gardening and plants today, 800-348-2551. Eleanor is in Monticello.
Yeah, hi. I'm wondering about composting at home and if there's any compost place that's in Sullivan County near Monticello.
When you say compost place?
Where you could bring your household vegetarian, and then there's a community service that does composting. Yeah. Do they have that in Sullivan County?
I don't know for sure, but usually if you check with your local waste site, your landfill or whatever it might be, that's usually where composting occurs. Yeah. Or with your cooperative extension, that would be the next resource to find that sort of thing.
Okay. And what about composting at home on your deck?
Well, as long as you have some sort of container. Composting is, you know, it's a natural process. It's not something that is very difficult to figure out. You basically have a cellulose material, you know, food waste or leaves or grass clippings, and you need a nitrogen source, and the grass clippings can provide some of that, or you can provide it with an organic fertilizer that has nitrogen. But you basically need a cellulose and a nitrogen material and some place where you can heat it up, where it'll naturally heat up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, when Bob's saying, sort of heat it up, all you really got to do is put it in piles.
And it'll do it.
It'll make a lot of natural heat.
Exactly. And it's, you know, you can do it in a corner of the yard, or if you need to do it on a deck, you could do it in a container of some sort.
Yeah, they do sell these, like, homeowner sort of small composting. I've seen them, like, tumblers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were going to do it on a deck, maybe something like a tumbler might work. It's definitely not a large-scale composting product or device, but it does work well. It's like a big barrel, and it has a handle, and it has a loading sort of slot, and you just dump your waste in. And those, I will say from experience, I know people that have had them, they do not produce a lot, but they do break down material much faster than in the pile, because you're able to turn it over a lot more faster, and therefore the whole breakdown or decomposition happens much quicker.
Be a little careful of what kind of food waste you put in it, because you can't attract mice or rats or things of that
sort. Right, right. Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks. Thank you for calling. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Go to Johnstown with Stanley. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, guys. My question is about a tomato blight. I'm wondering if there's any type of remedy for this without any chemical, if there's anything organic. I get this about every year, and I try to take off, remove the affected leaves on the way up the plant. What has happened about my mom got these tomatoes from Italy way back when, 60 years ago, and the lady told her to keep the seeds, and we've been keeping these seeds going for the last 60 years. And I'm just wondering, are these seeds breaking down? Are they more susceptible to blight than, say, a tomato that you'd buy out of a store?
Well, everything changes. And, you know, diseases mutate just the same as anything else mutates. So plants can become more susceptible to fungal problems because those fungus diseases have actually changed. It isn't so much maybe that your seeds have changed, but the disease may have changed. And also the weather conditions have fostered that the last few years. When you get
wet weather will affect them more.
You know, it's the same as any fungus. You get athlete's foot from tromping around in the jungle with a boot on. You know, it's the same thing. It's wet. But there are some organic fungicides. The trick with fungicides is to apply them before you see the problem. They're preventatives, primarily.
Okay, what I did treat them with was copper sulfate.
Copper
seemed to have helped.
Yeah,
and I try to treat the soil and dust it on the plant and all. And these are magnificent plants. Sure. These things, they're like trees. They're grown 7 foot tall, and they got numerous tomatoes on them. They started out, they're a plum tomato, but the tomatoes are the size of your fist.
Yeah. Do you rotate the crops between each successive year?
Well, I try to, but I've got it in a garden that's only like 25 by 25, so it's really hard. I put them on each side of the, and then I'll put them in the middle. I try to rotate, yes.
So you're doing some rotation, because even a little bit like that would help. It is a soil-borne type disease.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so it will eventually kind of build up. And
basically,
it could be
treating the soil doesn't do much for you because you need to treat topically on the leaves. And again, before you see any damage, that's the main thing.
What I was told, now, this is by an old Italian gentleman. He says if you keep removing those bottom leaves and chase it right up the plant, but in the end, all you've got is these tomatoes hanging, and there are no leaves, like a skeleton. But if that otherwise it gets into the tomato, and you lose your tomatoes.
Yep. I mean, there's probably some logic to that. It's not what we would, I think, typically just
recommend
as a general rule. But
trying to learn here.
Yep, there is
I'm
a little logic
old,
because.
Still learning.
Yep, a lot of times those bottom leaves are, as Bob said, if it's kept wet, and those bottom leaves are often more wet than the top leaves. So a lot of times it does originate down towards the bottom of the plants. Just curious, are you seeing that blight right now on your plants?
Yes, I am. That's what it is. Again, darn it, and we had that dry season, or dry session. I says, wow, this ought to be really good.
Try not to water
and
them
son over. Of a, I'm just out there now, and I see it starting. It'll get on the leaves. It'll start turning yellow and brown, and then it'll get right. You'll see the black spots right on the stem.
Don't water them overhead either. If you're going to water them, use a
No, I do not. I good. Water the dirt. Good. That good. That's good. A must. Yeah, okay. we don't wet the plant down. That's for sure.
Thanks for the call.
You're doing pretty good then. It sounds like.
Okay. Well, great. Thanks for the heads up, guys. I really appreciate it. Great show.
Yeah. Good work. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. This is Vox Pop on WAMC. All about gardening today. More calls in a moment.
Support comes from Interim Healthcare, helping people remain at home for 48 years, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day. Serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga, InterimHealthcare.com. From Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists, providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996. iMediaConsult.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole-grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Colby Attorney's Service. Document filing, document and information retrieval, and other services including legal publishing and corporate record searches. ColbyService.com. And from Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. BoydenandPerrin.com.
Vox Pop, WAMC, Bob and Fred are here. Bob Graves, horticulturalist and co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham. Also Fred Breglia, director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Gardening and planting today. We have an email from Andrew. He wants to have some suggestions for a vigorous, shade-loving climbing vine.
Oh, wow.
Well, your native, some of your native vines, Parthenocissus.
Quinquefolia, yeah, that would.
Quercifolia would work for that. The Virginia creeper.
Yep.
Boston ivy would work in that situation.
Yeah, both of those would tolerate it well. The English ivy, Heterohelix, would.
Heterohelix, the English ivy, if it's in a little bit of a protected spot.
If it's
get hurt by the winter.
Yep.
Another thing would be the Dutchman's pipe.
Yep.
Would work for that.
Certainly
too.
Would.
And also climbing hydrangea.
I was going to say climbing hydrangea.
That's a great one. Slow, but beautiful.
Slower, but by far the, I think, the Royals Royce of
really
the climbing
nice
vines.
Yeah. There's a lot of options.
It's hard
there
to beat a climbing hydrangea, yeah, but as Bob said, it will. Slow. That's not as fast as none of us would like. We'd
but
always
it's
like to
get big. There's one on the Cornell campus that covers the whole side of the library.
Yeah, it's they huge. Can get huge. I know where they are in the Capital Region on people's properties and yards, and you know they're literally like 70 feet, 60-70 feet tall on trees. They could be really, really big.
Can they damage a building? I mean, they get into the mortar and the brick and weaken it?
Vines attach by a multitude of different ways to various things, including trees and buildings. There are some, like the Parthenocissus or the Virginia creeper or Boston ivy that Bob had mentioned, then those vines are the ones that you see on, like, Cornell. And you see them at Harvard campuses. And
the ivy of the Ivy League.
Oh, the ivy of the Ivy Leagues. Well, those attach by these really dainty little suction cup fingers. And for the most part, as long as the mortar's all solid, they're not really penetrating in. So as long as it's good structure, they're just lightly attaching, and those don't really hurt buildings and structures, which is why
usually
Harvard and
okay.
Boston,
mm-hmm,
usually it's okay. Other vines attach by strangling or wrapping around, and they will literally pull material down, and they'll actually choke trees out and kill. We call them killer vines.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's these in-betweeners, like grapevine is a good one. It attaches with a tendril, so it itself doesn't really pull mortar or pull plants apart, but they get so big and they get heavy and then they pull with weight, and now they got a tendrils attached to everything. And sometimes grapevines, I mean, I've had a tree in a forest at the Arboretum, or old hemlock, literally be pulled and broken down by a monster grapevine. It was one of the largest grapevines I've seen.
Fox Pop on WAMC. Let's go to Post and Kill and Barber. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have been devastated with deer coming in and eating my hosta almost to the ground. Yeah. Will they come back, do you know?
Yes, they will come back. That's the good news.
Yeah, as soon as they come back, the deer are going to eat them again.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, hosta's real tough. They are prone to deer browse, unfortunately.
Deer, you know, you can get a spray repellent that you can put on those, you know, one of those rotten egg garlic concoctions or pepper concoctions. You know, deer have so much to choose from this time of year that they'll often, if you discourage them a little bit, they'll go somewhere else, particularly this time of year. In the wintertime when they're real hungry, it's harder. But, of course, that's not an issue with the hosta.
Yep. And you can make these concoctions up yourself, too, with literally water. Like Bob said, rotten eggs are definitely one of the staple ingredients. Garlic, I know they don't like garlic or cayenne peppers. I put that in. Maybe a little bit of lemon juice. It seems to have worked pretty well. The thing about those, though, and including probably the ones you buy, is that they do need to be reapplied.
Yeah.
So once a big rain comes, like a thunderstorm, forget about it.
Right.
You gotta get back out and spray it. But, hey, it's cheap. And it not only keeps, it certainly will work. It does. And like Bob said, there's so much food. So this time of year, we're not really trying to fight the really, really, really persistent deer. They're just looking for a quick snack. Something goes bad. They don't usually a lot of times even come back. They'll go to somebody else's yard.
I have another really quick question.
Go ahead.
I just purchased a bald cypress tree, and I wondered how well they do in this area.
You know, you're asking that's my second favorite conifer ever. I love bald cypress. They're one of the most adaptable trees on the planet, I think. They will grow in the swamps in Florida and Louisiana. They will grow all the way up to Maine. They will grow in standing water. They will grow as a street tree in a site with literally no water. They do like more sun than anything else, but otherwise, absolutely cold hardy, really, really good. And they even work as a street tree.
They can
live to 2,000 years old sometimes. The oldest ones are 2,000 years old, and their trunks will be 15 feet in diameter. So, but that'll take thousands, at least 1,000 years.
Oh, that's good to hear. Thanks
awesome
so
tree.
Much.
Awesome tree.
Thank you for calling, Barbara. 800-348-2551. Let's talk to Madeline and Rhinebeck. Madeline.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I recently got an irrigation system installed, and I've understood that the best thing to do is deep watering rather than frequent shallow watering.
Right, correct.
So my question is, how deep is deep watering? And let's say it's 2 inches. How do the roots 6, 8, 10 inches down get water from a 2-inch watering?
Well, are you primarily concerned about shrubs and perennials or the lawn? What's your main concern?
Shrubs and perennials.
Shrubs and perennials. Okay. Sprinkler system is often not the best thing to use for that situation because it is a shallow watering. Certainly what you would try to do is water, maybe a couple times a week if you need to, but for a much longer period of time. You know, where a lawn might need a half an hour or an hour, you might need to run those zones for several hours. And the way to do it is when you're putting water down like that for trees and shrubs, you'd like to get an inch or two down per week. And you got to put a little homemade water gauge out there, a can or a pan or something. And,
I've got it.
And
I've got it.
Yep, you put that out there and see how much you get out of a zone and then adjust your timing. It's a lot longer than you do for a lawn.
Yep.
And how deep do you, how much water should I look for in the gauge?
Well, the majority of the feeder roots of our trees and shrubs are within about 12 to 15 inches deep on those plants. So you actually are looking to get, I don't know how much water in a gauge will get you 15 inches, but because soils a lot of times play a role in this whole thing. But I always say to people, hey, if you don't know what your system is doing, what you do is you run it. Shut it down, dig a small little hole.
Dig a hole.
See how far that water has gone down in the main area where you're hitting. If it's only 2-3 inches, that's not going to encourage any kind of deep root feeding. It's going to encourage shallow roots of trees and shrubs. Shallow roots, shallow roots on trees and shrubs are typically the ones that get stricken the hardest with droughts. So we want to encourage deep watering less frequently so that those deeper roots are going to get water and there's more roots deeper. So always check it. And also Bob made a good point. It's not always the best system, an overhead irrigation system to do this on a big tree maybe, but soaker hoses are another really good way to go.
You keep in mind too that in this part of the world, our average rainfall is about an inch a week. That's what normal, I say normal in quotes, rainfall would be. So you're looking at least an inch or two a week probably on something like that.
Okay, and the other question I have is I put down about 3 inches of composted mulch. It's this delicious mulch that I've used for years, and everything just thrives like crazy in it.
Good, that's great.
So how does that affect the watering? Because sometimes I feel like, well, I'm watering the mulch.
Yeah, a lot of times. Well, you're actually asked some really good questions there because I get these questions quite a bit from folks. And it's a very good question. But so how does that affect it? Well, your 3 inches of mulch is going to do a lot to conserve water once it's in the soil. But just like exactly what you said, it's going to take more water to penetrate through that to get even to the soil. So a light rain, it may never even get to your soil. It might get soaked up in the mulch, and the mulch is organic particles, and not to get overly technical here, but they literally absorb water internally, and they don't really let it go down past them until they're waterlogged. And a mineral particle, which is everything that's below the mulch, all of those pieces of soil all actually only on the surface adsorb water. So they don't hold it as good as mulch. But mulch is really good, but you do, just like before, you need to test it.
And no more than 3 inches. That's the tops.
Definitely.
Thank you very much for calling. 800-348-2551. Gardening Today on Vox Pop is the number to call. Let's talk to Kathleen in Esperance.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
I have a flowering cherry tree. It's about 2 years old, and I was told that I need to, when I prune it, dip the pruners or the loppers in alcohol, like a rubbing alcohol, each time I cut. Is that true?
Well, you know, sterility is a good general practice. It's like going to a doctor, and, you know, of course, you want the doctor to kind of clean the tools between patients. Now, in terms of every single cut, this is what I would say. If you're pruning any diseased wood, any kind of diseases, absolutely. I don't dip them. I typically use a spray bottle, and I just give it a quick spray, and I wipe it off because I don't want all the liquid alcohol touching the next cut. I kind of dry them. Alcohol dries so quickly, you wipe it off, and you're kind of good to go. If you're generally, my general pruning, I will sterilize between trees, quick spray between trees. So, but if you're not sure, cherries are one of those plants where they could develop a number of different issues, including black knot, and black knot's really bad, and so is fire blights and things. So if you want to be safe, it wouldn't be a bad idea to give it a quick spray. Is it necessary if it's healthy? I think in between trees is probably good enough. And rubbing alcohol is definitely one of the best products for it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then I have one more question. I have a Dutchman's pipe plant that we got from the Landis Arboretum, and it's probably 25 years old. Is there a way that I can cut that to re-root it?
Well, you certainly could take cuttings of it.
Yeah, what I typically do with that is Google propagation of the particular plant, because there's very specific times. They're going to say take it at this time of year or at that time of year, and everything is different. But it's, yeah, that's a vigorous one. You could root that, or if there's, you know, some extra stuff coming right out of the ground, you could probably take a root section out.
Which, it's a really large root at the bottom, so I couldn't take that.
Yeah, no,
then
it's probably softwood cuttings would be my guess on that. Yeah.
That would be my guess.
Okay.
And like Bob said, you could certainly Google that. If you wanted the specific timing on it, you could certainly, I'm up the road from you, so, you know, come say hello, and I have that a really great manual in the office too. And the only thing I'll end this with is, just because you mentioned pruning, the other thing to make sure you're doing is making good pruning cuts. And if you're not sure about that, again, that website, free resource, Trees Are Good by the International Society of Arboriculture. That Trees Are Good website will give you diagrams on the proper cutting. This is a decent time to cut right now. It's a good time to do some summer pruning.
Yep.
But never more than 30% of the foliage off at any one pruning session.
Okay, well, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you very much.
We have an email from Catherine in Niskayuna. My hydrangea bush has not bloomed for 3 years. I have heard that some plants should not be pruned. I have not pruned this one for 2 years. The bush looks healthy. It's about 5 or 6 years old. Any ideas?
Well, I'm guessing it's a hydrangea macrophylla, and it, you know, when it blooms, it's either pink or blue. And there is so much controversy in the literature about prune it in the fall, prune it in the spring, don't prune it at all. You know, what we generally recommend is maybe some pruning in the fall. Wait till you see what happens in the spring. Now, quite often, mine will die right to the ground every year. Some years, if we have consistent snow cover, they don't. If they die to the ground or they get damaged over the winter, they'll come back. But you really need to fertilize them quite heavily, maybe every 2 weeks to 4 weeks, to get the growth to come, to get the plant large enough and healthy enough to bloom again. You can get some of these to bloom, but it's mainly a winter issue. It's not so much when you prune or what you do. It's what happened over the winter.
Let's go to Burlington, Vermont. Sabrina, go ahead.
2 weeks to 4 weeks.
Hi, Sabrina.
Oh,
she's on delay. Can you hear us, Sabrina?
She got the radio on.
Yeah, I'm afraid we're going to have to move on. Let's see. Kathy and Troy. Kathy and Troy, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a Japanese maple, and it has progressively starts off in the spring being a very deep, nice color red,
yeah.
You know, that dark, dark red.
Yep.
But then as time goes on, it starts turning green.
Yep.
And now it's very faded and...
Yep.
You know, it's healthy. It's very healthy looking, but the color's not right.
It's called bronzing. And it's
bronzing.
Normal. Yeah.
Yep.
And what will happen with that, if you pay attention to it, when it gets really hot, it starts to turn greener or bronzer. In the fall, when it cools off, it's going to go back to red again. It's just, it's normal. It's what some of those, not all varieties of Jap maples, but some varieties, particularly more common ones like Bloodgood, are going to do that. It's entirely normal.
Yep.
so it's not like a guinea pig.
Not in that case. I mean, there are some that stay more red than others, but like Bob said, those are pretty famous for that, and it's part of the normal growth.
The hotter it is, the greener they're going to get.
So no worries on that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
You got it.
Thank you for calling. We found Sabrina again. Sabrina, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. Gentlemen, thank you for your show, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just purchased a weeping cherry tree, and I noticed at the nursery that the burlap bag was full of weeds and that actually the soil that it was planted in was almost pure clay. Mm-hmm. So I took the cage off and I took the burlap off and I bare rooted it at the nursery. Fortunately, I had a great big tub and I filled it with water there too. And I put the root right in the water till I got it back to the property and it was immediately planted. And I filled the hole with water and I have this great compost mix I use. Mm-hmm. The soil, the backfill, and I put some rocks in there to keep it steady for the wind and that sort of thing. And I'm just wondering if I did the right thing by bare rooting it, because, of course, all the leaves fell off. And I figured that was going to happen because it's using all its energy for the poor roots now. But
you know,
did I make a huge mistake?
That's not what we would normally do. You plant it in the soil that it comes in. There's been some controversy in some of the literature over the last 5 or so years as to whether or not things would develop fewer girdling roots if they were bare-rooted, but that would be when they don't have leaves on them. When you bare root it, when it's got leaves on it, you've destroyed most of those feeder roots. Am I right on that, Fred?
Yeah. The ball and being clay is not a problem.
Not a bad thing.
No, a lot of times there are trees that like really organic soil. There are trees that like sand. There are trees that like compacted clay with rock. Cherries, crab apples, hawthorns, they've always been pretty good with being able to tolerate heavy clay, which is probably why, you know, the nursery's obviously growing and producing them in that type of soil. So the general rule moving forward will always be this. If you wanted to do bare root, you buy the bare root at only those select times a year. All the three main ways plants are installed is bare root, balled and burlapped, or container. They all have advantages. They all have disadvantages. But the balled and burlapped one, typically you want to dig the hole twice as wide and never any deeper than the ball. So a little shallower than the hole's fine, but twice as wide. Removing the material, removing that burlap and that wire is good.
Good.
As long as you don't break the ball apart. When the ball breaks apart, there's a ton of little fibrous roots that can often get damaged. So generally and then what do you put back in that hole? So typically whatever soil comes out, minus the rocks, you want to use that back in the hole. And if you do want to add a little bit of organics, you can, like a little compost, but you don't want to change the consistency of the soil in the process. So you actually want to use no more than 20% total volume of an organic back in. So I typically use, over all the years, most everything that comes out goes back in. If you give the dog, if we're talking about dogs,
too much food right out of the gate, it weakens it.
You got it. Or if you give him filet mignon to a lab, well, a lab is a bad example. Filet mignon to a picky dog, he'll never want to eat the other food. But these roots have to go into that surrounding soil to live long term. So future.
No.
Yep. Again, treesaregood.com, another good site. It'll tell you a lot about the bald and burlaps and things. But
Okay. So
right now you just wait because you're not going to know till next year whether or not that's going to survive.
Yeah, at this point it's a waiting game. I don't think I would, you know, give up on it yet.
I'm not going to give up on it. The soil that was in there and the compost mixture I used is just gorgeous. And I too use that mixed mulch that's near compost that I just absolutely love.
Yep. And if the tree has enough stored energy to refoliate, you're going to be okay. But if you go through this year with no leaves, there's absolutely no way that plant is going to leaf out next year if you don't get some leaves back this year, because that plant, in order for it to leaf out next year, has to leaf out from stored energy, and it needs those leaves to photosynthesize throughout the summer and then store with enough.
It's in cafeteria.
You got it.
Food storage, and I couldn't have starved it.
Knock on wood, you know, pun intended here. Let's hope this guy, you see some leaves in the next few weeks.
Thank you very much, Sabrina. Thank you for calling on Vox Pop today. We'll take more calls in a moment.
Support comes from Daughters of Sarah Albany, New York, providing seniors with transitional care and rehabilitation therapy as they move from hospital care to another level of care or home. DaughtersofSarah.org. Vermont Coffee Company, organic coffee in the brown paper bag, now roasted with renewable energy. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. Edith-Hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. Capital CarShare, a nonprofit car sharing network in the Capital Region, offering neighborhood transportation with a fleet of eco-friendly vehicles. CapitalCarShare.org for information and donations. And from Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans with weekly tastings. Stocking single malts, bourbons, tequilas, and gins. GrapesandGrainsWine.com.
Fox Pop on WAMC. Bob Graves is with Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Also with us, Fred Breglia, director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. And Fred, you're getting ready to run again, aren't you?
I am. I'm on the run, literally here. The Landis Arboretum is getting ready to launch its 12th perennial Forest 5K race coming up on August 11th. And we just got the new T-shirts in this year. In case anyone's wondering, this is sort of a sneak peek. But the color is black with white lettering. It came out really sharp. I think people are going to like them. And there's still lots of opportunities to pre-register and sort of guarantee yourself a shirt. But it is a run slash walk. All the info's on our website. The race kicks off officially at 9 a.m. Registration, I believe, opens around 8 a.m. And you can sign up day of the race as well. And I always say it's one of my favorite places to do a 5K. For one, it's the only place I do a 5K. For two, it's one of the most scenic 5Ks around. So definitely visit our website. I also want to say really quickly, we're in the midst of our summer concert series, and we do have another concert coming up tomorrow night. Visit our website. This one's a gypsy jazz type band, and it'll be happening rain or shine on the deck of the meeting house or inside, right in conjunction with the full moon. All details, landisarboretum.org.
This is Vox Pop on WAMC. John in Canaan. Go ahead, John.
Hi there. I've got three questions, but they're pretty quick. The first one has to do with a privet hedge. It's about 20 years old, about average 6 feet high. I took about a half a foot off the top of it last year. It's about 20 feet. Runs about 20 feet long. I'd say about a third of it is without leaves as of now. And what I'm wondering, the branches don't break when you bend them, but it sure looks a lot of it like it's dead.
If it doesn't have leaves on it now, it's gone. Yeah.
Some of it has leaves, but a lot of it doesn't.
Sometimes privet gets hurt in certain types of winters. I've seen privet die as a consequence of winter kill. So again, if it doesn't have leaves on it now, you can trim it out or replace it because it's not coming.
No, another thing to check would be, did it leaf out in the spring like fine?
Some of it did and some of it didn't.
Okay, so then the ones that didn't would be more related probably to winter. But one thing to check would be to go down to the base and see if you find any girdling or chewing from critters.
Yeah, there's not.
So then probably more... No. Okay, if you ruled that out, because they are prone to sometimes getting girdled. If not, it sounds like probably some winter damage. They are also pretty old, so you might think about replacing just those pieces and sections.
Yeah.
Okay, the other two are really quick. I have some peach trees. There are lots of peaches on them a couple of weeks ago. Now there aren't any.
Did they fall to the ground or did they get eaten?
I'm afraid we lost them.
Yep. The answer probably, would be if you had good peaches and they looked good, most likely a critter came in you weren't around or didn't see them and took them. If they didn't look like they were forming right and they looked like kind of fungal, they might have fallen off.
The tree may have aborted them, yeah.
Yeah, prematurely. The other thing to look at would be to see if his leaves look normal. If his leaves look really distorted, it could be peach leaf curl, and that's a disease, and sometimes that'll affect if the leaves are really bad, it'll affect the fruit, too. We don't know that either. That's treatable very easy with a copper-type spray. But my guess is that it probably looked good, and they disappeared, which means probably a little critter came in. And if you don't know, hey, you can always put a little trail cam up. Trail cams are cheaper and cheaper, and they're pretty fun, too. You never know what you're going to get. You might even get a person in your yard trespassing. Who knows?
David and New Paltz, go ahead.
Thanks for a good show, guys.
Sure.
My question is that I was talking to an indigenous person who I asked about controlling insects on plants and ticks and things of that nature, fleas on dogs and other types of horses or animals. And they all say that you take a handful of rolling tobacco and you put it into a gallon of water for about a week, and you put it into a spray mister, and you can spray your plants, your pets, and even yourself, and keep insects away. Well, and what do you think about that?
You know, one of the most toxic, most dangerous chemicals that I ever sold 40 years ago was nicotine sulfate. It's the only chemical I ever had that had a skull and crossbones on it. And that's what you're making, is nicotine. You're making a nicotine mixture there with tobacco. So, yeah, is it an insecticide? Yeah, it works great. But it's not organic doesn't mean safe. So be a little careful with it.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Okay.
I got one more question.
Sure.
I had a nice maple in my front yard. It's been there for about 100 years or so. And about 50 years ago, I planted a small seedling. It was like, they called it an English walnut. And now that English walnut is doing really good, but the maple seems to be going downhill. They're planted about 50 feet apart. Are they competing, or what's happening with that?
Hard to know.
Yeah, my gut feeling is if it is indeed an English walnut, I don't think that 50 feet apart, I don't think it's related to the decline of the maple. The health and vigor of the walnut is just, it's good. And the maple very well may have some problems that have sort of worked in their way to showing some symptoms. A lot of times we have these problems in humans that are the same way as plants. A lot of times you have problems, but you don't have any symptoms yet, so you just keep going through life, and then all of a sudden, the symptom shows up.
Depending upon what type of maple it is, there's a lot of things out there.
Yeah, it could be a lot of different factors.
A lot of fungus diseases and environmental conditions.
What kind of symptoms that maple showing? Just curious.
Well, for one thing, Central Hudson keeps on whacking down where it's growing into the wires, and it seems to not like that. And also, it's right next to a driveway where there's more traffic going over it.
If you're near a road, they don't like salt. I mean, accumulation of salt.
And it could be the compaction. I don't know if the driveway, like people sometimes park under the root system of that maple. And that's compaction and air. There's a huge air exchange process that's happening in roots. People
particularly
often don't realize that.
If it was a sugar maple, they really don't like exhaust and salt. They don't like it at
all. They don't like compaction. And it sounds like you're getting all three. And as time goes on, the more you can compact soil. Park a car under a tree when it's wet. The soil, you're going to do some pretty severe compaction very quickly. So compaction happens in minutes. To uncompact that, it takes a long time and it takes work. So we always say, in terms of soil conservation, prevention is always the best thing in terms of compaction. But once you got it, there are ways to increase the airflow. It's like aeration of the lawn, only much heavier.
It just may not be a good place for a tree too, if you're getting it trimmed because of the wires all the time.
So,
a lot of factors, it sounds like, but I would not think it's related to the English walnut.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. An email from Eric. Is there a hybrid chestnut that could be successful in the Hudson Valley?
Well, there are some chestnuts that grow around here. They're still somewhat susceptible to chestnut blight in the summertime, dependent upon the weather. So they do a little better if they're sprayed with a fungicide. Sometimes these things can look pretty burned in the summertime and yet still come back every year.
There are some varieties, though.
Another,
and they do better than the American, for sure.
Yeah.
I was given an established, this is another email, I was given an established lilac bush last spring and planted it right away. It hasn't bloomed since then, and it has not bloomed, and it looks either dormant or dead. Do you think it will come back?
Well, if it looks dormant, or in other words, no leaves right now, then I don't think there's much of a chance that you are going to be able to get that guy to come back. I think it's terminal.
If it just hasn't bloomed, that's not a big deal. But if it doesn't have flower, it doesn't have leaves on it, then it's gone.
Yeah, the if it's full of foliage and it hasn't bloomed, like Bob said, that's a lot of factors, including even just shade. They could live for a long time and be never bloom. But if it has little leaves, yeah, it's terminal.
It's over.
800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, the number to call. Jim in Bearsville. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi. Thanks for a great program. Two questions. One is about a woodchuck, and one is about an orchid. I have a woodchuck, or at least one woodchuck, eating my vegetables, and I was despairing until a guy who's a pest control guy said what I should do is, I know where the woodchuck lives. It's under a shed, which I can't get under. There's no crawl space. He said, put hardware cloth around and down the, you know, ring it around the entire shed, and that will keep the animals from establishing that as a home.
Do you agree with that as an idea? I've had this situation with woodchucks in a barn. And we put wire down all the way, and honestly, they went in there and they ripped it out. They are so persistent. They ripped it out, and there's brick floor in this barn, and the bricks are really tight. You got to go in there with a chisel to get them out. He took the bricks out of the floor. So these guys are really persistent. You can try the wire and see, but if they've got a nest and they're raising young, they're going to do anything they can to get back in there. We usually trap them. You know, you can get somebody professionally to come in and trap them. Or you can put, around the garden, what I did is I put a low little electric fence, and he came up, hit that one time, he never came back. If there's kids around, you don't want to do that, but a little electric fence, they sell them at some of the farm stores.
Really?
Know, yeah, it's possible.
That's interesting.
You put a fence around it.
A low electric fence.
Yeah, it's just a little low thing, about 6-8 inches off the ground.
And they sell them in, like, Agway or?
Yeah, or, you know, one of the other farm stores, yeah.
Yep. You also, even a low fence or, you know, a fence around a garden, and if you dug it down like that hardware cloth idea, you'd have a better chance of the woodchuck not going under the garden.
Yeah.
Because if he has young in there, it's going to want to get back to it. It's going to do whatever it can. But you know what? Sometimes you can live in harmony here. And if you can just, you know, fence the garden, they're not persistent in the same way to try to see how far down did he put that hardware cloth to go get that lettuce. They go a little ways. They usually generally hit some metal and they go somewhere else. There's a lot of food out there for them.
Yeah.
It's just the garden is obviously a little bit tastier, probably. So
The reason I like the shed idea was fencing the shed is I can't fence the garden. It's the whole property. It includes my flower beds, my vegetable beds, a little bit of lawn.
If it's not hard, try it. But I wouldn't be surprised if they do some damage to that wire.
It's worth a shot.
I can try that, and I like the electric fence. that I can do just around the vegetables without. Without whatever.
Yep, people
thanks.
Can kind
okay,
of
my other question is about an orchid, Phalaenopsis.
Phalaenopsis.
Yep, Phalaenopsis.
Yep. Okay. Last year, it produced a long flower stem and beautiful, huge, 5 to 6 inch wide flowers, multiple flowers. They lasted for 5 to 6 months at least. They were wonderful. I was very proud. In the spring of this year, the leaves started to look flaccid and not with bright green color. And so I transplanted the plant and put it in a slightly larger pot with fresh orchid, bark and stuff. And it didn't solve the problem. The leaves are still flaccid. It put out a new stem as I was going to make new, which had buds on it. The buds died.
Hard to know whether it needed to be repotted or not. It could have been too wet to begin with.
That would be my gut
feeling.
They
don't like to be repotted very much, so you may have gone the wrong direction with that.
Yeah, if it was too wet and it's easy, and I do like those Phalaenopsis orchids. I have them myself at the house, and I tell you, the ones I've lost sometimes over the years have been, you kind of think, it's dry, because those things really sometimes look like they're really dry, and they are. And then you water them, and it gets colder in the winter times. And then in the cold with the water, it's real easy to develop develop a root rot with those guys. And then sometimes taking something with a root rot and attempting to try to pot it up, now there's more moisture there, and it has no good roots to be able to pull that moisture. And my gut feeling is you're probably developing a case of root rot with that. Boom.
Put it in a smaller pot.
And what should I do about that?
Down pot it. Put it in a small pot.
Yep. Yeah, you could certainly try that.
Pot. And I get conflicting stories. Some people say just water the tray, the saucer underneath with a little, just leave a quarter of an inch of water in the saucer. Don't water through the top. And others say don't put any water in the saucer, just water through the top.
We just do it through the
what
top.
What do you guys say?
But the thing is to let it dry between waterings. That's the main thing.
That is the key regardless. You want to let it dry between waterings, just like Bob said. And also, I do water mine through the top as well. But, you know, some of those orchids I've seen, they don't have drain holes on the bottom. They're sold without drain holes. And if that's the case, it's...
You just got to get them to dry out.
Yeah, you really... I personally look at what... Because sometimes they're like a little pot inside of another pot. So look to see if you've got drain holes. Otherwise, no water is ever coming out of it. It's going to be way easier to get a root rot that way.
And we are just about out of time. Thanks to everyone who called in, and we apologize to those we left on the line. Thank you to Fred Breglia and Bob Graves for joining us today as well. Support for Vox Pop comes from the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery, Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. Identity Eyewear in Albany. Distinctive eyewear, including Zenka from Paris, Coco Song from Italy, prescription and non-prescription sunglasses, eye exams by appointment. IdentityEyewearAlbany.com. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. Slide and Dirty, serving handcrafted sliders, pub fare, and a variety of craft beers and spirits in downtown Troy and Schenectady. Trivia every Tuesday, 8 p.m. Food truck catering available for events. Slideanddirty.com. Thanks again for joining us today on Vox Pop. Our engineer, Zach Malloy, Colleen O'Connell took your phone calls. Our producer, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Brian Shields. Tomorrow is Food Friday. Now the news.